Hi, friends. I'm Pearson Cross. Welcome to Bayou to Beltway. Today we are talking with an expert on criminal justice and, as it turns out, drugs of all types, Dr. David Kay, the head of the Criminal Justice Department at UL Lafayette, is going to join us. Dr. Kay was born in Miami. He went to high school in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, college at the University of Florida. Go Gators. Got a BA in criminology, a master's in both sociology and pharmaceutical sciences, and a PhD in criminology. Then he went to Loyola, where he taught for 5 years, and then came over here to UL, where he's been head of the Criminal Justice Department for the last few years. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Good morning, Pearson.
Good morning. The reason we're talking to you today, although, you know, of course, we all would have a good time talking to you, is that there was a recent poll by JMC Analytics, which does public opinion polling, looking at issues regarding marijuana in Louisiana. And these results were ballyhooed in the press. They were a bit surprising. It appears that the public opinion about marijuana legalization is changing among the people surveyed. What did that poll say, and how is the ground changing in terms of public opinion on marijuana legalization?
Well, overall, the poll said, you know, three things broadly, and that, you know, largely all three things point to nationwide trends. We're not, you know, something that's kind of like a fish out of water here in the Deep South. We're really kind of following what's happening nationwide. So for the most part, all adults that are being polled are favoring less restrictions on both medical, but specifically they were asking for recreational marijuana. And here in Louisiana, we have about two-thirds of adults favoring legalization and medical, legalization of medical and recreational marijuana, which is a large increase from the last time Louisianans were polled on the topic. But there's strong support across every demographic polled, with the only difference being that older adults are less favorable of loosening up those restrictions, but they're still overall pushing a largesse of favorability in a direction that points to possible legalization, at least comfortability of legalization from the public standpoint.
Interesting. It appears that the strongest support for is among the younger residents. Is there a generational? What's the generational aspect, in your opinion, on recreational use of marijuana?
It's tough. It's not really a generational thing per se, but it's just like at that point in time, who's typically the active user? And if you look way back to when we started collecting data, that age band of 18 to 25-year-olds commonly is the ones that are using marijuana in the last 30 days, but also using marijuana at least once in the last year. And you'll follow those trends over time, regardless of generational patterns. So it's just that kind of like, I wouldn't say necessarily rite of passage timing of people's lives, but it's just when people start choosing to use marijuana more often. And since we've been passing medical marijuana and recreational marijuana laws throughout the United States, we've been seeing a little bit of an uptick within particularly that age band of 18 to 25-year-olds, but also an uptick of use in the past year, in the past 30 days, within folks older than 26, but not so much, and importantly, in those teenage years. We haven't really seen too much of an uptick for our youth, which is probably the most critical thing for all of us to kind of keep track of, to make sure that marijuana is not being misused by folks that haven't developed, you know, fully yet into adults.
Well, that's one of the things I think the poll that I was looking at didn't look at, which is actually use among the population. So do you have any sense of what use, current use, before we get into talking about laws or anything like that, is among people in Louisiana or among people in the United States?
Yeah, roughly speaking, about 1 in 5 teens around. We start polling people from age 12 through end of life, and we see about a 1 in 5, more or less, 12 to 17 year olds. And same thing with folks older than 26, around 1 in 5. But that, you know, college age, that 18 to 25 year old band, is like 40% of the population have used in the last year. Now, when you look at like kind of current use in the last month, it kind of ticks down, but certainly you're almost at half, you know, 1 in 2 of people around 18 to 25 that have some contact and used it in the last year.
It's pretty amazing that something that is so widely used also turns out to be illegal in many states. Now, Louisiana has changed its laws in recent years regarding medical marijuana. If you wouldn't mind, please refresh us on where we are. What are the laws currently on this issue?
So there's been a lot of rapid activity in the last couple of years. It's interesting to note that we've had medical marijuana on the books since 1978. It has been used in practice because we haven't built a system to cultivate, distribute, and dispense marijuana. But we've had a specific law on the books in 78. It was updated in 91 to cover two conditions, one glaucoma being the first in 78, two being spastic quadriplegia in 1991. Other interesting notes is that we've had a prescription drug called Marinol that's been sold for quite a long time, that's been used for the most part for anti-emetic or anti-nausea medication, but also to help with wasting disease. So if you know, folks don't have an appetite chronically and start losing weight, they can use that particular marijuana for that, or that particular marijuana product for those symptoms. But both weren't really used widely. And come about a couple of years ago, I know Fred Mills, a local politician, was one that shepherded the revitalization of that 1978 and updated 1991 law to actually include a system to where we have cultivation, distribution, and prescription and dispensing laid out in a way that confines a couple of specific conditions that are qualifying, like, you know, Alzheimer's, Huntington's, Parkinson's, and so on. But the latest update is that our legislature thought it would be wise to let any prescriber in Louisiana who's licensed that found that their patients had a specific debilitating disease, which in their practice they thought could be treated by medical marijuana, that they give them the authorization to go ahead and prescribe marijuana to their patients. But the trick is they have to have a bona fide relationship with that patient. It can't be someone that would go, quote, doctor shop for a medical marijuana card like they kind of did back in California, where, you know, anybody who had kind of an ache and pain can go complain to any physician, especially ones that, you know, became well known for handing out medical marijuana prescriptions. You truly have to have that relationship with your primary care, and they have to kind of see that you have a debilitating disease, and they can go ahead and write that prescription and get you passed over to the pharmacy to get a marijuana prescription dispensed to you.
Now, just in case you just tuned in, we are talking today to the head of the Criminal Justice Department, Dr. David Kaye, who is a expert on pharmaceuticals and also on criminal justice, so he's the right person to talk to. One of the things that I guess I was wondering about was, are the cannabinoids or the products that are sold, Marinol and all those things, do those have psychotropic effects with the patients who take them? Do they get the quote-unquote high that marijuana smokers, for example, would get?
Well, it's interesting. I'm glad that you brought up smoking, because in Louisiana, we don't have medical marijuana products that are smokable. We don't have that raw product available in our pharmacies. What we do have are a line of products that are created by two specific providers that Louisiana has contracts with in partnership with LSU and Southern University, that create tinctures and oils that you can take orally, balms and topicals, gummies that you do have psychoactivity, so they will cause some levels of inebriation. And so it's a gambit of materials that are psychoactive, but also they have, you know, pure versions of CBD. And I'm not talking about the stuff that you're finding, you know, on the corner store or any CBD shop. These are 100% regulated and held to high standards that the state has set up to truly be packaged and labeled in a way that tells the patients that they know exactly what they're taking and that it's been vetted as safe by our standards. So there are some critical differences, yet some are psychoactive, but it's very different from if you were to smoke marijuana versus if you were to utilize some of these products. The perceptions of a high, so to speak, are quite different. And truly, the setup that we have here in Louisiana is the closest to a true medical marijuana regime, so to speak, because we're taking away any of the hydrocarbons people would take into their lungs if they were to smoke marijuana, which, you know, could be related to lung-causing agents later on in life. So we're trying to take the most ethical and healthy approach with our way of approaching medical marijuana.
Now, in terms of the laws that we have in Louisiana, we have this medical marijuana, but until very recently, I guess it was very hard to get it, and it was hard to use it because of the things that Fred Mills's bill addressed. Is now medical marijuana in this state something that is commonly prescribed for certain conditions, and can it be procured legally through a doctor and a pharmacy?
Well, in the last year, the Board of Pharmacy, the Louisiana Board of Pharmacy, did report roughly about 16,000 individual patients that have received at least one prescription, which is pretty interesting, and around 64,000 prescriptions for medical marijuana have been dispensed since around August 2019. But if you want to compare that to the state of Florida, which has a similar medical marijuana law that has been recently passed, they're up to about 306,000 patients on their books. And to kind of give you an example of how we're approaching it here in Louisiana versus Florida, Florida's it seems like it's taken an approach that kind of matches what California had about 10, 15 years ago in terms of the availability of kind of like dedicated clinics that you can connect with kind of on the fly to receive a medical marijuana prescription if that particular physician of that clinic deemed it appropriate. Here, again, we're trying in Louisiana connect people with their primary care physicians or a physician that they have active relationships with in order to make that determination. So it's a little bit more narrow. So again, to give you a rough guesstimation, about 1.5% of the Florida population has received medical marijuana prescription versus right now we're probably at 0.4% of ours. So the access is a little bit slimmer. But if patients truly had need and voiced those concerns with their primary care physicians and that physician were to think that their conditions could merit medical marijuana use, that's a possibility for sure. It's just kind of been more of a slow and more cautious approach here in Louisiana.
Well, speaking of cautious, so what I'm hearing is now currently you really shouldn't just be walking around smoking marijuana. Is that correct? There are penalties on the books. I know that Governor Jindal signed into law Senate Bill 143, which reduced penalties for possession, but there's still penalties for possession of marijuana by somebody who doesn't have a prescription. Is that correct?
Yeah, of course. There's been a movement to decriminalize those actions. You know, however, you know, police might have probable cause to start a search or you know, at least stop and have a conversation with individuals who are found in possession, just because it might cause some additional curiosity. It might not be that the marijuana is triggering that stop per se, but it could be in context of other clues that could lead to a broader conversation that, that could cause a police officer to get curious. So people have still have to be mindful. It might not be that they're being questioned specifically for marijuana use, but it's certainly an element that is, you know, obviously easy to detect because of the odor. And that could start a chain of events that, you know, could get people in criminal justice trouble if they're, you know, happen to do other things at the same time, or again, cause that kind of radar to go up in terms of suspicion in context with other clues. Now that's the other caveat, is a police officer has to be able to document that.
Now, I know in New Orleans, marijuana possession was decriminalized in 2016. I guess tickets are issued, you know, penalties are reduced, no more jail time, but civil penalties may be a fine or so on. What you're saying suggests to me that police aren't going out of their way to pick up people who are smoking marijuana, or are they? Is it something where you're not supposed to smoke in public, or if you get stopped in your car and the police officer smells marijuana, is there a sense that that then will lead to a search or some other items?
Well, in terms of a car, it might change in terms of, you know, maybe not go in as so far as a search, given other context clues, but certainly, you know, kind of check, you know, sobriety, because obviously it's still illegal to, you know, drive under the influence of substances. And right now we're at a zero tolerance because of its illegality at the state level. And even if you were to have a medical marijuana prescription, the ability to detect sobriety is right now pretty strict. And the only way to truly get at a notion of level of inebriation with marijuana is to do a blood draw and understand how much active ingredient of marijuana is coursing through our blood at the time, and kind of get a guesstimation of how potentially inebriated you are from those results.
Well, that was the question that came to mind immediately, because everyone's pretty familiar with a breathalyzer test or with a blood test for alcohol. But how do you know? I mean, one of the things that people, I guess, wonder in terms of recreational marijuana and driving and the other kinds of things that we wonder about is, how do you know someone is, in fact, high, so to speak?
And that's the trick. We'd have to, you know, work with blood work. And I know various states are kind of adjusting at what level is the cutoff for, you know, safe driving versus non-safe driving, just as we have, you know, 0.08% of blood alcohol content. We have a similar kind of cutoff for THC content in one's blood to kind of trigger that would-be arrest, or, you know, to further an arrest to charge somebody with driving under the influence.
So THC shows up reliably in a person's blood, just kind of the same way alcohol does, a measurable a level and amount?
Yeah. And it's interesting. I know there's some research going on to build a broader breathalyzer that would be able to detect THC on breath. Now, that's still right now patented and under study, but it's probably going to take us a couple more years to vet that science and get it out into a way that we can start studying those patterns in real life before we even get to the point where we adopt it potentially for broader use.
Wow. We are, by the way, if you just tuned in, we're talking to Dr. David Kaye of the UL Criminal Justice Department. He is the head of that department and an expert in the area of pharmaceutical sciences and criminology. So he's the person to talk to about these kinds of issues. So the Louisiana legislature is going to go into session. Currently, there are 12 bills dealing with marijuana one way or the other. Most are aimed at trying to fix some of the roadblocks that exist in the medical practice marijuana. So have you been following those bills at all? Do you feel like you have a sense of what's going to happen in the legislature, or what bills we should be looking at?
To be honest, I don't know what's going to be the more popular version. It seems like the last update to our medical marijuana laws are truly expanding access. You know, certainly there's a lot of disparity in that access right now, just because of the cautious approach and you know, who has access to, you know, quality providers that would be able to, you know, go ahead and be tuned in to be able to prescribe medical marijuana in a way that would help their patients. You know, certainly that you know, speaks towards underserved areas, which probably don't have ready access to medical marijuana as much as well-served areas. I don't think that any bills directly address that. You know, however, potentially this recreational marijuana bill just kind of blows that out of the water. Just potentially that anybody who with a partnership with their physician would prescribe marijuana in a way that would be medicinal in nature and, you know, maybe, for example, would like to smoke it rather than would like to use the products that we have on the market. Another example of the ability of kind of giving people the versatility is that, you know, smokable forms of marijuana, you know, certainly have the ability to help with breakthrough issues, because if you were to ingest it in a way that's smoked, typically it hits your system a lot more rapidly. So it causes onset of relief for various symptoms quicker. The medical marijuana equivalent product that we have for that are, you know, kind of a metered inhaler. But a lot of folks maybe perceptively don't think that that particular product works for them. And there's, you know, compromises too in that there's vaporized forms of smokable marijuana that people can use to help them relieve some symptoms that they're trying to get relief from. That perhaps this recreational bill might resolve, but that's probably a secondary effect. It's probably not the primary effect that the petitioner is asking for. Truly, I think we're trying to align with options out there that other states are experimenting with. And I know the legislature is trying to use that particular bill to have the voice of the people, you know, truly lend to what they want in their parishes, but also statewide. So they're really trying to put it to a vote and see, okay, who across the state would be willing. And if, you know, more than 50% of the population statewide say, yeah, green light, that gives particular parishes the ability of giving a thumbs up and thumbs down approach to the ability of recreational marijuana in their parishes by a 50% vote in each individual parish. So it really gives a lot of people that flexibility to say yay or nay in their regions, but also yay and nay statewide. So potentially we could have a lot of change in the next 2-3 years.
Yes, this is a brave new world. So HB 524 would ask for parish by parish votes to decriminalize possession and sale. Of course, that would be you know, dependent on a statewide vote to allow that kind of parish by parish vote to go to get put in place. And then other bill would decriminalize possession and distribution after regulation and sales tax. There's so many thorny issues with marijuana, you know, and I'm thinking about, you know, marijuana is a plant that could be grown. So there would be probably some people who would not, you know, go to the marijuana store to buy it, but would just say, what the heck, I'm going to grow some of my own. Even if you're in a parish that doesn't allow the sale and use of marijuana, you might be next door to a parish that does. How can we, what about children, you know, the 12-year-olds? Now, they may want to smoke marijuana, but, I mean, so it seems like there are a ton of issues here. What to you stand out as the most problematic?
Well, the good news, before I go to the problematic news, is that in a lot of areas across the United States that moved towards the legalization route, is that we haven't really seen a broad uptick in youth use. Certainly not relative to other demographics that we've been tracking in the last 5 to 10 years. And the trick, you know, truly comes down to education and prevention. We have a couple of new evidence-based curricula that we can deploy throughout primary and secondary education spots in a way that, you know, kind of matches, you know, their skill set at you know the time in their life. You can start you know kind of earlier in some of the primary education ages, through grade five, not you know directly approaching it, but you know certainly building coping skills and you know ways to you know work on self-esteem to the point where if you do evidence-based drug education curriculum in around the middle school age band, that it proves to be more beneficial in preventing the onset of use. And that's the most critical thing. If we can delay that onset of the average age of when teens start using any sort of substance, be it alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, the longer you can get that average to wait and push out into the teenage years, the more successful that cohort would be with healthy lifestyles, with reducing substance abuse patterns in that cohort. So that's really the critical thing for them. Now, the problematic thing that we still haven't gotten a bearing on, and the jury's still out, is you know upticks in traffic fatalities, potentially because of the broader use of recreational marijuana products. You know, some studies suggest that there has been a relationship between deadly traffic fatalities or traffic accidents, broadly speaking. But we really haven't, you know, linked these two things causally because, you know, it's really kind of difficult to, you know, truly make that relationship, you know, given the broad array of the patterns of what's truly at the heart of causing those traffic fatalities. Because at some issue, there might be some overlap between alcohol and marijuana use that might be hard to disentangle. You know, we're still working on how to enforce marijuana rules on the road. So we're still gaining our bearings. So I think in the next 5 years, we'll have a better understanding of, you know, that link that could be directly tied to marijuana and to see if there you know, truly is that connection or if we're being overly cautious.
We have about 45 seconds left. So quickly, how is this idea of recreational marijuana received in the broader criminal justice community, the sheriffs, the police chiefs, and those on?
It takes a lot of pressure off them. I don't think many in the criminal justice realm would move into the recreational approval. Certainly, they're more comfortable with the medical side of the house, to where you know there's a lot of regulation. You know, the rules don't change too wildly for their day-to-day life, especially on patrol. So I'm sure that it's going to be mixed. In fact, there probably is going to be a little bit of pushback from our criminal justice, more on the policing side.
That's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. We've been talking today with the head of the Criminal Justice Department at UL Lafayette about bills that may or may not change marijuana usage in Louisiana in the future. Thanks for joining the show, Dr. K.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Kraft.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Feeling blue because you missed the latest episode of your favorite KRVS radio program? Well, head on over to krvs.org and scroll over Audio on Demand, where you'll find a drop-down box of all of our locally produced programs. Select your favorite program from the list and find an archive of past episodes. It's all at krvs.org.
Enjoy Zydeco Blues and Old School R&B on the Zydeco Stomp, Saturdays from noon to 3, only on KRVS 88.7 FM and online at krvs.org.
11 p.m. on KRVS. It's the Minor Chord. You are listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette Lake Charles, online at krvs.org.
Coming up next on Louisiana